Whenever I hear this story about the widow dropping her two copper coins into the temple treasury, or the story about the widow who was willing to feed Elijah out of her meager supply of meal and oil, I'm reminded of certain people that I have known. I can put a face on these widows. Faithful members of very modest means who never missed putting their offering envelope in the collection each Sunday. Shut-ins who always had an offering envelope waiting for me after sharing communion with them. People who barely had enough for themselves to pay the rent and buy food, who gave very generously. You too have probably known such givers like that, perhaps your own parents or others in your own family. Having known people like this, I have become aware of the difference between making a contribution out of our abundance and making a commitment that involves sacrifice. Contributing what we have after we have met our own needs and sacrificing at least some of what we might have spent on ourselves. I remember a corny little story that illustrates the difference between making a contribution and sacrificial giving. So if you indulge me for a moment, I'll share with you a bit of this barnyard humor. It seems that the animals in this farmyard wanted to honor and thank the farmer who took so great care of them, and they knew that breakfast was his favorite meal. And so they decided to have a special breakfast for him. Each of the animals would contribute something. The cow said, "I'll give the milk." And the chicken said, "I'll give the eggs." And so on, each animal was willing to make their contribution. And then they said, "What would breakfast be without bacon?" And they all looked at the pig. And the pig said, "You're all making a contribution, but I have to make a sacrifice." But to put this into more biblical terms, we read about people who gave themselves to the Lord. In his second letter to the Corinthians, St. Paul writes about taking up a collection among the Gentile churches to aid the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem. Paul urged the Corinthians to be as generous as the Macedonians. And even though the Macedonians were not by any means rich and they were going through some tough times themselves, Paul used the Macedonians as an example of generosity. Giving beyond their means, he says, making a sacrificial offering. And as a kind of explanation for their generosity, Paul writes that they gave themselves first to the Lord. They gave themselves first to the Lord. Stewardship begins with our commitment to give ourselves to God, not just our money, but all that we have and all that we are. It all belongs to God. And then we decide how to allocate our time and our energy and our money and everything that we have to do the work of God in our situation, in our family, through our church, at work, in school, in our community, reaching out to those in need. It's a matter of how we budget our lives, how we budget all the things that God has given to us. The poor widow dropping two copper coins into the temple treasury had a very simple budget. She put in everything she had into the temple treasury. This dear soul gave her all. How many church stewardship campaigns have used this widow as a role model for giving? She has served as our stewardship poster child. Why, if we could all give like this, our budgets would be easily met. We'd have more money that we knew what to do with. But I wonder, is Jesus raising up this widow as an example of how we ought to give? If generosity is the main point of this story, we can imagine that the tone of Jesus' voice in verses 43 and 44 were very appreciative of this widow's willing sacrificial giving. Perhaps even Jesus was amazed. And although it doesn't say it in the text, we can imagine Jesus saying to his disciples, "Go and do likewise. Be more like this widow." But I think that we're missing something important if we only use this story to bolster our giving. Now, I don't want to take anything away from this widow's exemplary generosity. I wish I could give myself so completely to God as she did. But I think there was something else that caught Jesus' attention there in the temple. Given what Jesus had just said before in verses 35 to 40, I can no longer imagine that Jesus' voice was filled with wonder and praise for the widow. In fact, I detect in his voice some anger and disapproval. So it's important to understand this story in the temple in the context of the verses that just precede it. Jesus said, "Watch out for the religious teachers who walk around in their long robes, who take advantage of the special honor given to them, getting the best seats in the house." And then comes the real kicker, obviously the key that unlocks the reason why we need to look at this story from a different angle. "They devour widows' houses, and for the sake of appearance, say long prayers." I'm not sure what was all involved in devouring widows' houses, but I know it wasn't anything commendable. Some biblical scholars suggest that the temple leaders acted as guardians for widows who didn't have any other support. These leaders probably provided some minimal assistance, a token charity, but those who managed these charitable funds would use them to enrich themselves. They would take title to properties that belonged to poor widows and then disperse them to these widows only a pittance allowance, so that most of the widows ended up in poverty. But these religious leaders would enrich themselves. And what is more, we can imagine that these religious leaders would make these already vulnerable widows feel obligated to give to the temple treasury, even their last pennies. So when Jesus saw this widow giving away her two last coins, I do not see a smile of approval on his face. This is not an example of good stewardship that we should try to imitate. What Jesus saw was how far off course the religious establishment was in terms of doing the work of God's kingdom. They had lost sight of their purpose and their mission. I can imagine that most of the temple budget went toward the maintenance and the upkeep of this marvelous edifice of worship, and giving these religious leaders in long robes a pretty comfortable and secure life. And we notice in the next chapter of Mark, just as the disciples are admiring this wonderful temple with its beautiful stonework, Jesus said, "It's all going to end up in rubble." But that's our text for next Sunday. Most of you have received by now, I think, your annual stewardship letter, is that right? And your little promise card to indicate your commitment to support the life and work of this congregation during the next year. Today you're going to have your congregational meeting to consider the church's budget and elect church leaders. And I hope you will consider the generosity of this poor widow who was willing to give her all to inspire your giving, even though the system that she was giving to was corrupt. Her heart was in the right place. Even in her poverty, she showed her complete faith in God. But I hope that you will also consider how you allocate the money in your church treasury. Consider the church budget as a reflection of your values and the church's purpose and mission. How much of it should be spent on maintaining and securing the edifice and the institution and all the services that the church provides for its own members? I know this is important, to have a beautiful church, to have a wonderful place to worship and which we can share with others. But what else is important in the mission of the church? What is our purpose here on Union Street in Hackensack? What is God calling us to be and to do? What is our mission? Today you'll be electing elders and deacons. I have no doubt that every one of you who has been nominated is an honest, committed, and qualified Christian person. But our text this morning urges us who take on church leadership to consider our purpose and calling. We are called to be servants. When I listen to Jesus' warning about corrupt leaders walking around in long robes and saying long prayers and take advantage of poor widows, all I have to do is look in the mirror. I'm called to be a servant of Christ. When plans were being made to make this my first Sunday as your interim pastor, I checked with Carol to see whether it would be okay to start off with a stewardship sermon. I didn't want to leave the impression I would be one of those preachers who would always be preaching about money, and I promise you I won't. And Carol assured me that this, since this is Stewardship Sunday, it would be okay to have a stewardship sermon, and this is the day of your annual meeting when you'll be considering your church budget. We don't have to be motivated by applying pressure or manipulating people by feelings of guilt or making them feel obligated to support the work of the church. Stewardship is informed by the gospel of Jesus Christ, who gave his all for our salvation. That is the message we preach. Everything we do in the Christian life, including what we give in the offering plate, flows out of God's free gift of grace. And we simply give out of gratitude. And we want to share this wonderful gospel with others. Now to him who by the power at work within us is able to do far more than we can ask or imagine, to him be glory in the church and in Jesus Christ forever and ever. Amen. It is now time for the offering. There was a pastor who finished his stewardship sermon one morning and announced that it was time in the service to receive the offering. And he said, "I have some good news and I have some bad news. The good news," he said, "is that we have enough money to meet our budget and pay all our bills. The bad news is that it's out there in your purses and pocketbooks." Stewardship has been defined as everything we do after we say, "I believe." It's not just about giving our money, it's about giving ourselves to the Lord. Let us now present our offerings to the Lord.